This is the Everything Financial Radio podcast. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. I am here every week with two podcasts, interviewing a guest expert and providing some commentary on what lies ahead for you and your money. I'm glad you decided to tune in today. Momentarily, I'll have joining me Mr. Lawrence Reed. Mr. Reed will be our guest expert on both podcasts this week. Larry is the president of the Foundation for Economic Education. That organization is doing some terrific work with young adults, educating them on not only economic history, but also monetary history. And we're going to be able to pick Mr. Reed's brain today. Have a great conversation with him on an article that he wrote titled, Are We Rome? And we'll be talking to him about the parallels between policies in the ancient Roman Empire and the United States today. And some of the parallels are very, very similar, almost identical. And some of the cycles that we're seeing today also existed during the Roman Empire. So I know you're going to have a great deal of interest in the conversation that I'll have with Mr. Reed here momentarily. Also, remind you very quickly that if you have not yet gotten our investors kit, you can get our investors kit by visiting investingapproach.com. When you request the investors kit, you'll get a copy of the New Retirement Rules book, an educational CD and DVD, as well as a copy of the magazine, The New Economy. Again, the website to get your free investors kit is investingapproach.com. I'm very pleased to have back on the Everything Financial Radio program Mr. Lawrence W. Reed. Mr. Reed is the president of the Foundation for Economic Education. I've been a big fan of their work. And Larry, welcome back to the program.
Hey, my pleasure, Dennis. Thank you so much.
Larry, let me just jump right in, because you published an article titled, Are We Rome? Can you just explain a little bit about the premise of the article, and then we'll jump in and talk about specifics. By we, who do you mean?
Well, by we, I mean the United States of America, specifically, we Americans, but you could also pose that question for Western civilization in general. And the theme of the article is that there are important lessons from the history of ancient Rome, especially the Roman Republic, and that there are parallels, alarming parallels, between the fall of the Roman Republic and recent developments here in the United States and across much of the West. And those developments include the rise of the welfare warfare state, for want of a better term, the idea that government should not simply protect the peace and the common welfare for everybody, but rather get into the business of foreign adventures and lots of spending for special interests at home. And Rome went that path and ultimately became not only bankrupt, but also lost its freedoms and became an imperial autocracy or dictatorship.
So, Larry, that's pretty alarming, and the words now of my history professor are echoing in my ears. The history professor said that those who don't study history are doomed to repeat it. Talk a little bit about just the political structure of Rome, and compare it to the political structure of the United States today. You use the term republic. I thought that was interesting, and that's something a lot of listeners might not be aware of.
Okay. Well, the Roman Republic was born in around 500 B.C., 509 B.C. to be precise, when the Romans, just like the Americans did in 1776, the Romans threw off a monarchy, and once they were free of that, they were so tired of the centralization of power in the hands of one man that they established a republican form of government, which involved due process, separation of powers. They had two people at the top, the highest positions. They were called consuls, and one could veto the decisions of the other, and they were term limited to only 1 year. So they were looking for ways to limit the concentration of power in the hands of any one person. They did that through term limits, through the rule of law. They established a Senate, representing the people of Rome, more precisely, the noble families. It wasn't a perfect republic. But on top of the Senate, they also had popular assemblies with lots of Romans enjoying the right of citizenship and voting for their representatives in those assemblies. So it never was a perfect system. They even had slavery for all of Roman history, so not everybody was free. But nonetheless, it represented the greatest advance for individual liberty and small representative government in the history of the world. And, of course, we paralleled that and did the same thing at the time of the American founding. It's just that Romans didn't keep it. After about 500 years of that, they lost it all through a steady erosion of the Republican values of limited government and responsible citizenship, and the rise of things like power lust, the welfare state, looking to government to get something at the expense of others. The late economist Howard Kirshner, I think, summed it up well when he said that when a self-governing people confer upon their government the power to take from some and give to others, the process will not stop until the last bone of the last taxpayer is picked bare. And that's certainly exactly what happened to Rome. I'd like to think Americans can profit from that example, learn from it, and turn back from this destructive path that we're on that so terribly parallels the decline of ancient Rome.
You know, another thing that pops to mind, Larry, that the Romans started to devalue the denarius about, I think, 1 AD or so. The denarius was a unit of currency, and certainly to fund this excess spending, the denarius ultimately ended up becoming a fiat currency. There's certainly some interesting parallels with what's happened to the U.S. dollar over the last 40 years and the denarius at the time of the Roman Empire's fall. Can you comment?
Yeah, you're right, Dennis. There's a big story just in the currency of ancient Rome, and it's interesting parallels to the United States all by itself. Actually, it was Emperor Nero in the 50s AD who really got the country or the Roman Empire on this path. Before that time, as the Roman welfare state grew and they needed more money to hand out to various constituencies, the Romans would simply send the military to the silver mines and the gold mines and tell them, dig a little deeper. But with Nero, I don't know who it was, whether he thought of it or somebody else came to him and with the idea, but he basically decided that, hey, we don't have to have more gold and silver when we want to spend more. We can just cheapen the currency. And he started the process of calling in the coins and then melting them down, mixing in a lot of cheap junk metals, and then minting new coins out of that mixture so that the precious metal content of each coin was reduced. And that's how they financed much of the growing welfare state. They cheapened the currency. But, of course, that led to a soaring price inflation and various panics in the economy and ups and downs and depressions. In fact, by the time of Emperor Aurelian, around 270 A.D., the Roman denarius, which was 96% silver under Nero two centuries before, by the time of Aurelian, it had fallen to less than 1% silver, and they'd had a lot of price inflation in the meantime.
Well, it's a fascinating conversation. We are talking today with Mr. Lawrence Reed, who is president of the Foundation for Economic Education. And we've got a minute left in this segment, Larry, so it would be a perfect amount of time for you to let the listeners know how they might go learn more about your work.
Okay, I would recommend they visit our website, which is FEE, Foundation for Economic Education, fee.org. If they're interested in Rome in particular, all I need to do is to go to fee.org/Rome, and then they'll find a lot of resources organized under this topic that we're talking about today. But the whole website is a treasure of 70 years of commentary, freshly updated every single weekday, and lots of resources for teachers and students there, too.
Well, your organization does great work. I'm a huge fan, and I'd encourage the listeners to go check it out. And certainly happy to have Mr. Larry Reed with us from the Foundation of Economic Education this week. You know, in this segment, and in keeping with the way we usually structure our program here today on the Everything Financial Radio program, I want to talk to you a bit more about Mr. Reed's question, and that question is simply, are we Rome? You know, in the last segment, Mr. Reed talked about a lot of the parallels between the Roman Empire and where the United States is today. And he talked really about three things. He talked about the rise of the welfare state. He talked about the fact that Rome was ultimately bankrupt. And he talked about the fact that the Roman emperors decided to weaken the currency or cheapen the currency, the denarius, in order to try to deal with the debt. So in this segment, I want to go back and examine those three things as they exist today in the United States. The rise of the welfare state, are we ultimately bankrupt, and has the currency been cheapened in order to attempt to deal with large deficits and debt levels? Well, if we go back and simply look at the welfare state and look at starting with government spending, in 2014, governments in the United States, this is a federal government, state government, local government, all governments combined, are expected to spend nearly 40% of gross domestic product. Now, if you're not familiar with gross domestic product, it is simply the economic output of our country. So 40% of the economic output, I should say nearly 40% to be accurate, of economic output is being spent by governments. Governments in the United States, according to the website governmentspending.com, will total $6.3 trillion in 2014. Well, where does all that money go? Well, about $1.2 trillion a year is spent on pensions, including Social Security and government employee pensions. Governments will spend about $1.3 trillion a year on health care, and that is principally Medicare and Medicaid. Those are considered to be welfare programs, even though you've paid into Social Security, and calling Social Security or Medicare and Medicaid a welfare program might seem like a bit of a slap in the face. That's what they're considered to be. Now, historically speaking, that number has gotten a lot larger. According to the same website, usgovernmentspending.com, government spending in the United States has increased from 7% of gross domestic product about 100 years ago, a little more than that, in 1902, to almost 40% of GDP today. Government spending in 1902 started at 6.9% of GDP. Some of you may remember back in 1995 when then-President Clinton said that the era of big government was over. Seems that he was wrong. Spending dropped back to 21% of GDP immediately after World War II, but it climbed until it hit a peak of 35% of GDP at the bottom of the recession in 1980 to 1982. Thereafter, government spending chugged along in the mid-30% of GDP until the mortgage meltdown in 2008. At that time, government spending reached 41% of GDP. Now, there was an interesting blog, an interesting op-ed written by a gentleman by the name of Professor Williams. He is Vice President for Policy Research at George Mason University. And I want to give you a bit about what he said, because I think it really outlines what Mr. Reed was talking about on the last segment, and that is that the United States is taking a parallel path to that of Rome. And Rome ended in disaster. It ended in the fall of the Roman Empire. Here's what Professor Williams says. He says, there's no shortage of real and imagined crises vying for the headlines these days. Left relatively unchallenged, largely ignored, or often denied by Washington and the media, however, is one of the gravest internal self-made threats to our economy, the crisis of government debt. Most economists agree that the United States federal debt poses a real and serious problem for our future, but for the debt deniers, such warnings fall on deaf ears. As the latest Congressional Budget Office report notes, even with a recent and temporary decline in budget deficits, government debt continues surging to historic levels. In 2007, for example, debt owed to outside investors was about 35% of the nation's GDP. Now, that's just 7 years ago. Today, this debt level is 74%, or nearly three-quarters the size of our economy, and there's no sign of this getting smaller. Yet, even this projection is optimistic. This assumes that Congress will do the right thing and maintain the spending controls currently written into law. They don't have a very good track record when it comes to restraint of any kind. And as we're sitting here in political season and all the ads are on television saying that we're going to balance the budget and cut taxes, it reminds me of every campaign I've heard in the past, all empty promises. President Obama, arguably a pretty liberal guy, had a 2010 National Commission on Fiscal Responsibility and Reform acknowledge the gravity of the situation. The National Commission reported and warned that America's long-term fiscal gap is unsustainable, and if left unchecked, we'll see our children and grandchildren living in a poorer and weaker nation. There's lots of models to project the growth of the debt. One of the models that I like to use comes from Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff of Boston University. Professor Kotlikoff has been a guest on the Everything Financial Radio program here several times. He says that if you add up all of the IOUs and liabilities and stack the IOUs and liabilities on top of actual debt, the true fiscal gap in the United States is $205 trillion. That's $650,000 of debt for every American alive today. In fact, those who say we're going to tax the rich in order to solve the problem, don't bother to tell you that in order to do that, you've got to tax 88% of all income earned over $167,728 a year, and that's just to balance the budget at today's level. It doesn't count increases in Medicare and Social Security spending, and it doesn't count paying down debt. Now, Mr. Reed in the last segment said that the Roman Emperor Nero in 50 AD grew the welfare state, and rather than having the mining companies go out and mine more money to get the money was made of silver, he decided to just gather all the currency back in, melt it down, put in some weak metal, and debase the currency. And what happened? The currency was debased, and there was a massive inflation. What has the United States done? Well, if you take a look, going back to 1971, and I choose that year because that's the year that Richard Nixon eliminated the link between the U.S. dollar and gold, a $20 item that you purchased in 1971 would today cost $117.46. That's a pretty massive inflation, not unlike that seen in Rome. If you go back to 1933, when then-President Roosevelt confiscated the gold of American citizens in order to print money, a $20 item in 1933 would today cost $365.93. That's according to USinflationCalculator.com. And in 1913, the year the Federal Reserve was founded, if you take a look at what $20 would buy in 1913 and see how much it would cost to buy the same item today, $480.51. That is almost 2,300% inflation. That is significant. Our Investor's Kit talks about different strategies you might consider in your own personal financial situation to protect yourself from ongoing currency devaluation. If you've not yet gotten a copy of the free Investor's Kit, I would encourage you to go to investingapproach.com. That is investingapproach.com. Just let us know where to mail your free Investor's Kit, and we will be glad to do that. Again, the website, investingapproach.com. That's our first podcast for the week. Thanks for listening.